Hey, Brian.
Hey, Elliot.
What's the talk of the table?
Welcome to week two of our Zine Month series here on Talk of the Table. And today we are talking about two of our favorite games this Zine Month, Axolotl with a Gun and Blightfall. Today we are talking with John Boyle and Bree Dedanen from Breitbard Games about their latest TTRPG, Axolotl with a Gun. Bree and John, welcome to the show.
Hi. Welcome.
Hello. Thank you so much for having us.
Thank you so much for being
here. So good to have you.
We're thrilled to talk about some, gun-toting salamanders.
Yes.
Immediately before the show, we were referring to like getting some axolotls on staff for Axolotl with a Gun, and the topic of sensitivity salamanders came up, and so I really need one of those on my staff.
Gotta
like, pronto.
Gotta have it.
So if any sensitivity salamanders are listening, shoot Breitbard an email.
Yes, please.
Yeah, breitbardgames @gmail.com.
So John and Bree, we're here to talk about Axolotl with a Gun. Could you first off just give us the elevator pitch for Axolotl with a Gun?
Yeah, this is the one that I fire off at the convention booth all weekend throughout the year. So Axolotl with a Gun is an arcade-style tabletop role-playing game about axolotls with guns fighting evil robots who are trying to mess up their habitat. And that's like the revolving door pitch.
Short and sweet. This game is almost a pitch in a title, you know?
Right.
People will come up and ask me about, like, and just say Axolotl with a Gun, and usually my response is, it's really sort of self-explanatory.
You know, if you weren't sure by the title, you're pretty damn sure by the cover.
Yeah, right? Yeah. The cover says it all. There's lasers on it, there's an axolotl with a gun, and you're in a pond. I mean, I don't know what else you need.
How did this game come about?
It's actually, I think, really indicative of how about 50% of our games at Breitbard Games come to be, which is that Bree starts drawing a horrible little guy, and I go, oh, that's a game.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
There's a game there. And then for Axolotl with a Gun, the game actually came together in about 20 minutes because Bree was doing the doodle on her Twitch stream, like a timed doodle of that little dude. And so I was like, I bet I can finish the prototype of a game by the time you finish that drawing.
Yeah, I stream art, and so sometimes people will, like, use their channel points to, like, be like, hey, could you draw this silly little thing? And they're like, an AK axolotl. And I was like, sure, I'll draw an axolotl with an AK-47. Sure, why not? And John was like, I'm making a game out of that in 20 minutes. And I was like, go for it. And then we put it on our itch, and then John kept going on it, and now we're here.
I love it. It swiftly turned into our like best-selling game that we released, I think, originally back in 2024. And so it's been so wildly popular that we're doing this crowdfunding project for a second edition of it, which I have updated with a whole bunch of fun new stuff, including removing the infinite looping dice glitch that was present in the first edition.
Yeah.
This is a first. I've never heard of someone having to patch their game because something's OP. I love that.
Yeah, we make games very video gamey. Like you really could just put them into video games, but we don't have coding skills, so we make TTRPGs instead. And yeah, so we've had to patch our games a few times because John writes in a mechanic and then someone like plays it and they're like, someone rolled a million d6 and it was within the rules, and you're like, ah, that shouldn't happen.
Which, again, the game is like, we build the game as arcade style because I kind of wrote it in the style of those like side scrolling kind of like button mash. You have like two abilities and directional inputs, and then like every so often you get knocked out and you have to like throw a coin in there, and like that's like the game's sort of essence thematically. So it felt right to me that the first edition had a numbers issue where one of the guns, which is functionally your character class, could just keep rolling dice forever.
Hell yeah. That's very arcade. There's two things that catch me when I see this game, and it's like in the description where it's like arcade style and then coin operated RPG. Can you say more about the coin operated nature of this game?
Yeah, so the original draft, I had just seen a friend do some fun like show and tell mechanics in one of their games where like you could gain a mechanical benefit by playing show and tell with the dungeon master. So I was like, that's really cool. And so I was like, yeah, bring something cute with you and then bring something like metal with you. And then you could show and tell with the GM and then describe how your axolotl like pulled out one of their cute little hobbies or something meaningful to them to gain an advantage in the moment. And then with the second edition, I was like, this is like, okay, but I feel like I could lean into the theme we have more. And so I traded that mechanic out for like the coin op stuff. So now you have like a pool of coins that you start the game with a few, you get the one at the end of each like level, because we structure the scenes in the game like they're levels in a video game. Like you get an additional coin at the end of each level, and anytime your character gets like knocked out or you run out of like supplies to use your abilities or stuff like that, you can basically, as you would with an arcade game, take one of the coins out of your pool, hand it to the GM, and then like insert coin to continue.
That's so good.
Yeah. And it's very necessary because, again, the protagonists of the game are axolotls. Axolotls are really, really cool, but they are salamanders, and salamanders have to stay wet in order to like stay alive. So while they can like kick around on land if they want to, and they can breathe there because they're weird and have gills and lungs, you're also like drying out all of the time. Mm-hmm. So anytime you make a roll, your stats like gradually reduce as your character's like running around on land fighting evil robots, slowly drying out. So you have to like keep spritzing them with water by inserting coins.
It's funny, for as often as I've used coins as tokens in like token-based games, I've never thought of it as insert insert coin to continue. And it's like, oh, it's so obvious. It's so, yeah. So good. It's like, it's been sitting right there in front of me.
I know. We need to bring back like the belonging outside belonging and like no dice, no masters, like those really like token focused games, and make one about an arcade or something, and then just like their coins.
Insert coin to continue is good. Really, really compelling.
Haunted arcade belonging outside belonging would be sick.
Yes. Yeah. Next year.
Yeah, next year. That's next year's thing.
ZineQuest 2027.
Also, not to actually you, John, but salamanders don't dry out. Axolotls do.
Okay.
Because they are specifically neonatal, which means that their adult form is like the middle point between like tadpole and like full adult salamander. So regular salamanders can produce mucus, so they don't dry out on land, and they get rid of their like gills underneath water. But axolotls have both lungs and gills, so they can technically go and breathe on land, but they can't produce mucus, so they will dry out if they're on land.
Come on, John. You got to come prepared.
Come on, John. This is why you need the sensitivity salamander.
You need the sensitivity salamander.
It's also, I think this is a good insight into our development process, because Bria has like a real interest in real world biology.
Yeah.
And that winds up reflected in a lot of our games because of that. She'll be like, well, but this is how the real creature works, or how the thing that this is probably descended from works. And how do we reflect that in game mechanics?
That's really good.
Using my focus in biology and my degree in anthropology, really, in my game design, sort of.
Well, so I know there's some mechanical patches. There's the new coin op. Bree, on the visual side, is there anything like you're really excited about bringing to the second edition that wasn't in the first? Like new drawings, new little guys.
I'm really excited, I guess, mostly just to draw more axolotls. The first edition, we didn't, because of the rushed timeline to make the, like, first edition, like, print version. I basically drew, like, five things for, like, five, like, I drew the cover and then, like, five different, like, spot art things. So I only drew, like, two axolotls for the whole game. And so now I've drawn, like, 10 or 12 axolotls so that, like, you can see them, like, using their hobbies, all of the different guns that they can use. There's going to be, like, a whole one that I haven't, like, finished yet, but I'm really excited to draw is, like, truly, like, a full-page illustration of, like, a fight. Like, a whole, like, battle scene that I've thumbnailed but I haven't finished yet, and I'm really excited to draw that.
Hell yeah.
Gotta get more axolotls in a second edition.
Yeah, exactly. I'm like, it's a game about axolotls. People want to see the axolotls. And also just for marketing reasons, like, more axolotls is never a bad thing for people to want to buy.
Maximizing axolotls per page.
Right. Yes, exactly.
That's how you measure the success of this project, for sure. How many axe models can you fit
the APP axe models per page.
Exactly. Yeah.
We all know the APP. We're all considering it.
Yeah.
The other kind of mechanical thing I want to make sure we touch on is that, like, the core engine is the Havoc engine.
Mm-hmm.
And why was that kind of the mechanical fit, other than, like, you've added this coin thing, but the base mechanics, why is Havoc engine work so well for this?
The inspiration for me was, like, retro video games. There's, like, arcade games. And at its core, I think, like, my feelings on the Havoc engine is that it's very video gamey. Like, you have your each scene of a Havoc engine game is driven by an objective that represents, like, the core tension of the scene. And so, like, the objective will have the difficulty. Let's say it's 8. And if we're playing Axolotl with a gun, it might be, like, repel a mecha raptor ambush or something like that. That's, like, that's essentially, like, an objective bar in a video game. Or, like, if you're playing one of those old side-scrollers, oftentimes you'll have, like, a little thing at the top that tells you how far into the level you've gotten. So that's functionally, like, what that represents. So you're basically just rolling tons of d6, describing scenes of, you know, increasing whimsy and robot carnage. And, like, as you spend your dice doing that, this meter, like, fills up. And then at the end, you get your kind of catharsis of, like, whatever narrative leads you've been setting up with your particular flavor of axolotl chaos kind of pays off at the end of that. And then you move on to the next level, pick, like, an upgrade from your list. And that's kind of like why I think the Havoc engine felt really right. Like, it's very video gamey, and so is the core conceit of this game.
Cool. So, I mean, the big question that we love to ask on these interviews is, we love Zine Month. You know, we love this, like, initiative of the community coming together to make, you know, smaller games, print games. Why Zine Month for Axolotl with a Gun 2E?
It feels like the kind of, like, scrappy, weird little thing I would expect to, like, find scrolling through the list of Zine Month projects. I think it's got, like, that kind of weird, whimsical, like, charm that I expect to find. Like, I know one of our colleagues is doing, similar to what we did, like, a few years ago, like, a snack-based game. And I love the energy that Zine Month brings in terms of people just bring all of their weird, fun, funky ideas and throw them into, like, you know, a 20 to 40 page saddle stitched book. And so I think it fits really, really well with that crowd of kind of experimental, funky little games.
I think if you were to ask me, like, what is a game that kind of exemplifies the vibe of Zine Month, and you didn't know anything about it, I just said axolotl with a gun, you kind of get a pretty clear idea of what Zine Month is. You know what I mean?
Yeah, right.
In a really great way. It's like, it's the fun little games that are like, it's this weird idea that we came up with from one drawing and one 20-minute thing, but now we realize that was awesome, and we got to dive deeper and deeper into it and see how cool we can make this thing.
Well, and, like, one of the real joys of this system is because it's so simple, it's really, really easy to iterate on. So, like, with the new edition, I revised a lot of the guns, which, again, I mentioned earlier, but I can go into a little bit more depth here. Like, they're essentially, like, your character class that you pick when you make your character, because each one changes how your dice pool works. Because functionally, everybody, unless your gun says otherwise, is rolling dice, trying to roll under your whichever stat you use to make the roll, axolotl or gun. But the guns can, like, change that. So there's some guns where, like, you gain a little combo die, and then, like, as you succeed, you run the combo die up, and then when you hit a crit, like, you empty the combo meter, like, you're comboing out in a fighting game, and then it crits for a huge number. Or, like, there's one that you can only crit, but your, like, success range narrows because it's a missile launcher. It's like, if you hit, it's gonna go away. It's just you're firing a missile, and it's not the most accurate thing in the world. We have a companion zine that's coming with the Kickstarter that was kind of for people who, like, already have the core game to be like, hey, here's some, like, new fun stuff that we've designed, some new adventures, some new, like, rules, like, for playing GMless or Duet. And, like, here's a bunch of new, like, guns and ultimate moves and other stuff like that. And so designing those dice mini games for the guns is really just, it's a super fun way to play around with it. Kind of like, how can I make your D6 dice pool be a little bit fucked up? You know,
yeah,
right. Yeah.
I love an asymmetry in, like, in class style. Like, I like feeling like I'm getting to do my special thing over here. That's so fun. So there's a bunch of new guns. There's also, you mentioned hobbies, I think. of each axolotl? What is the hobby side of this?
you're just little guys living your lives when the evil robots show up and try to harvest your habitat for its resources. And so you also have your axolotl has little hobbies, which in the core Havoc engine, this has replaced like gear that the vampires have in Eat the Reich. But for the axolotls, it's stuff like, oh, I can do K-pop dances, which means I'm really good at doing synchronized movements to dodge bullets or lasers. Or like I have like my hobby is plant parenting and my little axolotl hut is full of plants. And so I can like use them to, I don't know, make like vine traps or any number of other things. So they kind of like they're a way to fill up a few more dice into your dice pool if your stats are starting to run low and you're like drying out a little bit. And they make for some really interesting narrative choices that people will make based on the combination of hobbies that characters will roll at character creation. I've seen some really fun, like emergent gameplay. Somebody decided that they like were part of an eldritch K-pop cult because their two hobbies were like summoning adorable horrors from deep within the lake and K-pop dances. And so the rest of the table, like all eight people that I was running for at the time, were like, we are 100% in on this K-pop cult now.
That's really good. It's really strong. I love, there's so many good words in all the like things of this that just like tickle my brain. It's just like, yeah, eldritch K-pop cult, like, you know, missile launcher. There is a small child in me that is just like jumping up and down giddy at all of the new details.
I did also include in this version of the game, this is something that I like to do for our more video gamey titles. There's a list of achievements at the end of it. Sick. That you can hunt, because like it's a one-shot RPG, and so I like to like have some nods for replayability where it's like, yeah, you could play this again with a different character and try and unlock the achievement for hitting 20 successes on the rocket launcher with like an orbital strike or something where you roll just a like comical amount of dice in one turn.
Yeah. I really love the achievements addition. We put that in Trash or Treasure first, and one of them was just like use a banana. Like make like use a banana peel to like have someone slip on something. Like, I don't remember exactly what it was, but like one of the items that you could get, because it was about trash, is like you can get like a banana peel. And so it's like use the banana peel for like the big boss fight and like and I just love the addition of achievements. So like a lot of our like Havoc engine stuff has achievements now, and it's so fun.
There is a certain type of player where like they are the completionist and they want to do all the weird little mini games with inside the game, and that's it's just fun. It's fun to look at the back and be like, ooh, what are the little bonuses I can try to do?
Yeah.
Also, I do think weaponized hobby is maybe like the best way to describe like an interest, like how to make an interesting TTRPG character. It's like, great, give them a weaponized hobby that they can use throughout the rest of the campaign.
I was running a demo of this at MAGFest, where I was tabling across from Elliot all weekend, and it was really fun to watch people go, so my hobbies are mini painting and knitting. How could I use these? And then, you know, next thing you know, they're like, can I like knit a little thing like a bandolier to fill with grenades and then pull out all of the pins and throw them at the robots? And I was like, yeah please do.
yeah there it is again. There's that little like dopamine rush to my brain at fun weird thing. That's awesome.
This game started as that silly drawing in a stream that added some rules, and then now is getting to be this chunky and chunky thing. But it is also like a game that very much has like a point of view, in that all of the main antagonists of the game are, like you said, like eight giant AI conscious mech monsters, you know, cryptocurrency and LLMs. How did that come into, like, when you start from something that is just goofy character with some fun rules on top of it, how does it become a full thing? Like, what was the path that that took?
Yeah, so this game was originally written like spring of 2024, which was kind of on the heels of like the cryptocurrency stuff and the NFT stuff, and was, you know, walking into AI and Gen AI and LLMs and image generators and all that fun stuff. And so I was like, that feels like a natural sort of thematic bad guy here. Like I can put a bunch of evil robots who represent this sort of shitty antagonistic force in the real world that has very, very real environmental consequences. And it felt like a good fit to me because axolotls are endangered. In the wild, they have basically like one habitat that they live in, which is a lake in Mexico City. There's a few like neighboring species of axolotls that occupy some of the wetlands around it, but their habitat is very, very limited as a result of, like, unsurprisingly, colonialist expansion that drained a bunch of the swamps that they lived in, which then shrank their habitat down to just a handful of wetland areas. So having like an endangered creature be the protagonist of a game where you're fighting against a tech fad that has very serious environmental impacts, especially like it's an aquatic creature, data centers and large language models take enormous amounts of water to train because these like water-based or like evaporative cooling. It felt like a good fit thematically.
I love when you can dig underneath the layer of something silly or cute and it's like, actually, well, we have something to say.
that's sort of our MO kind of always.
Yeah.
It doesn't seem like it when you're like, oh, this is a cute game, and you're like, I'm being slowly radicalized.
All of a sudden I care about wetland preservation, and like Bri and I from Minnesota, which is basically a big swamp that a glacier melted and created.
Yeah.
Are like, good.
Good.
So before we start rounding out to a close, let's ask the sort of business details. Where are you funding? When are you funding? And what can people kind of get from the project during this scene month?
We're funding from February 3rd until the 26th, which I think is the first Tuesday to the last Thursday of February, which is most of zine month. It'll be on Kickstarter, kickstarter.com/axolotl2nd edition. You can find the links on all of our socials. I'm sure you'll see them around.
And in the show notes.
Check the description.
Yeah.
Go to the show notes if you're not sure how to spell axolotl.
Yeah, that's really important.
Yeah, we're funding the 3rd to the 26th. You can find us on ZineQuest on Kickstarter. And during the campaign, our early bird backers get a really cute Thanksolotl sticker that Bree drew.
Thanksolotl!
Yeah. We also have badge ribbons whenever we go to cons that just say thanks a lot when you buy something.
Really, I love good. It so much.
I'm glad.
Cute aggression is sort of our brand.
Yeah.
That's great.
That rules.
But yeah, early bird backers get a cute little thanks a little sticker. There's also a companion zine for people who already own the game. We're going to have all of like stickers and pins. And if we, one of our stretch goals is like new pin designs. So we have like all of the new axolotl art that Bree drew for this. And if we pass one of those stretch goals, then we get a whole bunch of new axolotl sticker and pin designs. They're all very, very cute.
Yeah. My favorites are I drew the back and front of coins. Of axolotl coins.
Ooh.
And they can be, if we hit the stretch goals, we'll be making front and back coin. Well, maybe not like dot switching ones because that's a lot of money, but like you could get either the front or the back or both pins of the coins. And the back one has a little, like, you know, like when the cat art has like the little butthole, there's a little butthole. And it's very cute.
We have a heads and a tails side.
We have a heads and a tails. Yeah. Very cute.
Wow.
And then what is the goal you're trying to hit with this Kickstarter? Like, what's the first goal and where are the stretch goals at?
The first funding goal, we're trying to make $4,200, which pays for the print run and for all of our amazing contributors, professional editing, so that I don't miss any more infinite dice glitches. And, you know, layout and art and all of that good stuff. And then our stretch goals are just $800 after we fund at 5K. We'll print a like physical versions of the companion zine that comes with the game. So Axolotl with a Gun, Armed and Dangerous is the name of that. It's got all of the like new guns, hobbies, a couple of like new pre-made adventures to just like take straight to your table. And then at 7K, we have all of the new pin designs and sticker designs and stuff that people will be able to get as add-ons.
I know you got a couple of members of the team. You want to shout out who else is going to be on this team making Axolotl with a gun?
Yes, absolutely. So we have the inimitable Will Yopst as our editor. Will is amazing. We worked with them on Bonds Between, which we did for Scene Quest last year. Really, really love Will, love their work. And then also we have Emily Entner on as our graphic designer. Emily and I, it's really one of the singular pleasures of working on our games that I get to like hand a white Google Doc with black text in it to Emily and Bree. And then a few weeks later, they hand me a beautiful, colorful, incredibly well laid out book.
Yeah, that rules.
We were talking about this not too long ago about for like our actual play show, My First Dungeon, we've started working with another sound designer, Jay Stroutman from Planet Arcana. And I didn't realize this was the thing that I was going to love. But at a certain point, Jay would send me back like an edit and I'd get to listen to it. And it was the first time in a long time that I'd been surprised by my own show.
Ooh.
Like, there's great value to doing everything yourself, but also, like, the second you bring in collaborators, now you get to see your own work and your own project shared and also get surprised by it in ways that you never expected. It's really, it's lovely. It's great.
Yeah.
I'm having a lot of fun with it.
Working with Emily is one of my absolute joys as an artist because, like, she can just whip something out that is so absolutely beautiful. And then I will like have my list of art that I'm like working on. And then she'll be like, hey, could you like add one like tiny little thing? And I'm like, yeah, 100%. And it's like the best thing that she's ever asked me to do. It's great. There's a lot of times when we work together, there's no art director. We just kind of share the responsibility of being like, oh, I think this would be really cool. Oh, I think this would be really cool. And it's the best.
Love Emily.
Yep. She's great.
So, John and Bree, we've reached that point in the interview where we ask you the question we ask everybody who comes on Talk of the Table, and that is, what are you bringing to the table? Which is just our cute way of asking for a recommendation of anything and everything normally, but for Zine Month, we would specifically love a recommendation for another Zine Month project on any platform that's funding this month that you're excited about.
I'm really excited for Food and Evil by Goose Poop Games. It just seems really fun. It's also very similarly cartoony. Goose Poop Games makes a lot of really silly games, very similar to us. And so our games always work really well together. And I love sort of seeing the different like ways that Jordan does mechanics and stuff. So I'm really excited for Food and Evil. And then one that I found out today was Steph's game of the lovely TTRPG kids making a snack-themed game, which is so exciting. Because we already made a snack-themed game, so I'm so excited for another snack-themed game to be out there in the world.
Mm-hmm. Gotta get more entries to that snack-themed genre, just like we gotta get more into these coin-operated games.
Yeah,
yes,
exactly.
Please. I love tabletop RPGs that are a little bit video gamey.
Mm-hmm.
I think my pitches, there's a really cool zine by Spilled Coffee Creatives on Kickstarter called The Bottle Episode that just launched a couple of days ago. It's an RPG about like being in a bottle episode. Are like so very, very enchanted by that. And then there's also Gobs by Spencer Campbell, which is just like a silly little goblin RPG that he's made that he's drawn all of the art for. And so it's just horrible, fucked up little goblins doing goblin things. I'm really here for it. You get I think there's a like very physical element to Spencer's where you like flick pieces of the game around the table.
And TTRPG Kids' new game and Food and Evil are both on Backkit, and Bottle Episode and Gobs are both on Kickstarter.
And they will all be linked in the show notes.
Yeah.
In the show notes below. Bree and John, thank you so much for coming to the table. Do you want to let people know where they can find you online if they're looking for you? And also just remind us again where we can find Axolotl with a Gun.
Yeah. You can find both me and John at Bree Donnan or Resident Bard on all socials, usually Blue Sky or Instagram. And Breitbard Games, you can find us at Breitbard Games also on all things. We also have a website, breitbardgames.com. And it's what it sounds like, Breitbard Games. Easy to type into a search browser. And Axolotl with a Gun is coming to Kickstarter on February 3rd. So go to the Zine Quest tag on Kickstarter or search Axolotl with a Gun. Look in the show notes to see how to spell Axolotl, and you'll find it.
And search that Kickstarter page to see if they've added a sensitivity to salamander, because which yes. is certainly needed for this game.
It's made my top priority.
All right. Thanks so much.
Awesome. Thanks, guys.
The Badlands. Legend has it that beneath the dust, something old and powerful still whispers to any gunslinger foolish enough to listen. One day, aboard a doomed train into the wastes, three unlucky travelers hear that call. A runaway socialite, a shape-shifting bounty hunter, and a retired thief turned family man. Will our outcasts find what they're looking for?
I mean, we're already here. Let's have a little fun.
You really went in there, guns blazing.
I thought that was the plan.
My potions are miraculous.
I thought we were being quiet.
Oh, Stump only has one volume. Sorry.
Wild roses grow out of his mouth, having filled his lungs.
What's happening out there?
Violence.
Find out on Mage Hand High Five.
Hello and welcome back to Talk of the Table. Today we are joined by Matthew Ayers to discuss his new game, Blightfall. Matthew, welcome to the show.
Welcome, welcome.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Pleasure to have you. I'm excited to talk about this game. The crowdfunding page looks fantastic.
I appreciate that. I definitely got some help on that. So thank you, Rich of Hatchling's Games.
Hell yeah.
Oh, hell yeah. Love Hatchling.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, like, immediately this page is evocative. I love the purple. I love, like, the art. It's very, it just makes you like, ooh, what's that right away? So, in the spirit of, ooh, what's that? Matthew, could you give us the elevator pitch for Blightfall?
Yes. Blightfall is a dark fantasy game for a GM and 3 to 5 players. It's about doomed villagers infected with darkness who have to sacrifice the last shreds of their humanity to have the power to protect their home. It's a collaborative world-building game. You create your community and the threats that it faces, but you also go inside that game, inside that world, with narrative elements that are very player-driven, as well as a combat system that is dangerous and requires a lot of communication and teamwork.
You got the whole breadth of role-playing there. You've got the wide-out world-building and then the zoom-in of more narrative play.
Yeah, I'm surprised it works, smashing all those things together, but it does, apparently.
What was
I love go ahead, Brian.
No, you
got it. Nope.
Now we have to keep this in. Now it's funny.
Oh, fun. So Matthew, I like the words that immediately start like bouncing in my brain are like collaborative world building. Because Blightfall, when I look at it, I'm like, this feels like it might have a kind of specific setting, given the sort of vibes of, like, you know, this corruption and stuff. But how flexible is that collaborative world building? Like, how different can this world get depending on who's playing?
It can get very different. I've done worlds where it was a dust bowl that was sucking communities up in the panic of 1907 or 1906. I'm not a history person, but the person who suggested that was. I've done Snowpiercer. Snowpiercer actually comes up a lot. A lot of people love a Snowpiercer situation, being on a train. Underwater places, things floating in distant interdimensions. It's gotten pretty weird.
And then for a game that has, you know, world-building elements and narrative elements and combat elements, what do the mechanics look like going from one to the other? Because those are many different systems probably playing within there.
100%. The world-building is right at the beginning. It's its own session. It can be. I've seen it go from 20 minutes to 3 hours, just depending on the enthusiasm of the people playing. Mm-hmm. You can really go wild defining these places. And then once that is defined, you go into actually playing inside it. And that's where you get narrative and the combat. And it's like many games, it's narrative until it's combat. Mm-hmm. Narrative, I wanted to be simple. I mean, the whole goal of this game was, even though it had all these disparate elements, for them to work together and to not overwhelm you. So it's a D6 pool system, 6 success, 4-5 mixed, 1-2-3 failure, doubles, you get a little bad thing that happens to you. But besides that, once you go into combat, that's a little different. That's more complex. I, to kind of tangent off and go into my history, I started playing D&D. I bounced off it fast. It wasn't for me. What was for me, it turns out, was Fabula Ultima, which I campaigned 2 year-long campaigns of at the same time, which is not something you should do. It's too much. It's a good game, but it's too much. And I think playing that so much then led to me finding flaws in it, things that I didn't like. Doesn't mean it's not a good game. It's a great game. I literally own everything that they have put out for it. But I think at a certain point, what pushes you to become a game designer is you have something in mind that you want to create and you're not seeing it.
Yeah.
So it is a gridless combat system, and everyone can do their moves. They all hit. There's never a point in combat where you miss and you lose your turn and you're sitting on your hands. There's never a point where you are knocked out and then you can't play anymore. Even when you die, you are still playing. And it all is based on the system of collecting corruption or blight, which you don't see. Only the GM knows how much blight that you've collected in using your abilities. It is both your XP system as well as controls how quickly you descend to that final death.
I just want to pull at something you said there. Even when you're dead, you're still playing?
Yes. When you die, and in the actual core rulebook, I have a first section where, also a thing about the game, the rulebook is it has a narrator, and then it has the blight infecting the book.
Yes.
So it's popping in, and it's giving you different information. It's covering up pieces of information, and one of the things it covers up initially is what happens when you die. It promises you it won't happen and you'll be totally fine. And then when you get to the end, the GM section, you find out what does happen. And what happens is you become the bad guy. You turn into a monster, an abomination, and you attack your allies. So now you're playing against your former friends. And it's very interesting to see the emotions that occur when that happens. I'm a big fan of it. But of course, I designed the system, so of course I love it.
I love the idea of, you know, it's something that I think we've seen in the last few years in projects of, like, different narrative voices. I mean, Triangle Agency is, like, the forefront in my mind of, like, the prime example. It's such a fun tool to be able to, like, also make a book, a game book, a joy to read. You know, the fact that there is, like, kind of a narrative going through it. So that's very fun.
It's also interesting to see because I'm looking at the pages, and as the blight becomes more involved, you see, like, the pages going from, like, parchment layout, like, you know, white, to this, like, slowly blackening page, which reminds me of Paint the Town Red from Soul Muppet Publishing. They had, like, the blood gutters where, like, the blood came out of the gutter of the book and got, like, more and more red. Or even, like, one of my favorite Mothership, like, little things was in Gradient Descent. Every time the page is black, the lights are off in the room. Every time the page is white, the lights are on in the room. It's just seeing that evolution of story in the layout. It's always really exciting and, like, evocative as a reader.
Definitely. I want to take this moment, especially, you have to leave this in. The Mothership Deluxe Box has been on my Christmas list for 3 years now, 2 or 3 years. No one has gotten it for me. And I know my family's going to listen to this. So just letting you know, guys, I'm here. I'm waiting.
To the Ayers family.
Yes, yeah.
You have all been called upon. Now you can do the funniest thing in the world. Every single one of you should buy Matthew the deluxe box. Get him nothing else. Everyone, he's going to have 30 of these things.
There's going to be a black market in Atlanta for this. Very soon.
That's really good. That's really good. No, we are leaving that in. Absolutely. Oh.
Merry Christmas to me.
Merry Christmas to you.
Hilarious.
Yeah. there's another thing, like, I'm just like, this is the reason, like, one of the main reasons, like, we wanted to have you on is just there's things that just, like, catch me when I'm, like, looking in, like, an exciting way. Like, the classes, I'm going to read the six classes to this game because I think that they're very evocative. The bell tower, the harbor, the garden, the bonfire, the cathedral, and the mausoleum. And I just, like, immediately want to know how those translate to, like, different kinds of characters. Where did these classes come from? Like, they're them being places rather than sort of roles. How does the classes look in this game?
One of the things that I wanted to do when making this game is to not have standard thief, you know, paladin, warrior, because that creates expectations, biases towards how you would play, towards what abilities and things you expect to do in the game. And in a game where it's starting with collaborative world building, I want you to have a blank slate to build on. Now, the character sheets all have different cues and prompts for the world building, as well as building your character. So it still gives you a direction. But I just don't want someone to pick this up, go, okay, well, I play the rogue. It's my favorite thing in every game. And then just not get to fully engage. And that might be selfish of me. Not that people shouldn't get to do the things they want to do, but I'm also a cruel and malicious person, and you do what I say this time.
It is helpful to have those, like, unique and novel class, just names, because now you're coming in fresh, as you're saying. You're coming in clean. It's like tabula rasa, and you don't have the baggage of, you know, D&D or Pathfinder or Call of Cthulhu weighing you down when you're trying to experience something new and interesting, you know, in Blightfall or in any other game.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I want everyone to have, is just, and even the classes are built where you start off and you have one ability. That ability has both a narrative and a combat component. And then as you go, you pick up more abilities. You're picking between two abilities every time you rank up, which happens immediately in combat or outside of combat whenever you accumulate enough blight. And so you're defining your character as well as you go. I have a character in a playtest right now. He's just obsessed with bones. He's picking every single ability that has the word bone in it. And if it doesn't have the word bone, he is rewriting it to include bones. And that's just, I'm glad. I'm not going to see the bone guy in D&D. You might see, like, Necromancer, but this is a little, you know, different. And I like that.
It's just a guy who likes bones.
This is the bone guy. So when it comes to, like, the sort of actual, like, when we're in, you know, a session, what am I rolling or not rolling? What's the actual kind of, like, mechanics I'm engaging with physically?
As long as you're dealing with the narrative portion of the game, you use the abilities that you have, or you say, I want to do this. And if it's, you know, one of those classic dangerous, uncertain, important, you're rolling die. One of the interesting things about it is that eventually the powers get so strong that you as the GM no longer have control over the narrative. I have started sessions and then immediately they zag and I have no idea what's going to happen. And it is so refreshing and exciting. And that might not be for everyone, but I like not railroading people. I like seeing these stories play out. So they have such control over the narrative that they are going to make these decisions of when they're rolling, when they're going to use an ability, and then when they hit a point where this needs to be solved by violence, then combat comes in.
For a game of Blightfall, for like a campaign, what is the length and breadth of a campaign generally look like? Are you looking for like shorter, like, you know, 6 to 10 sessions, or are you looking to do like mega campaign, this is your year game?
I am absolutely not looking to do a mega campaign. Like I said, I did those two simultaneous one-year campaigns and it taught me a lesson. I cannot do that anymore. Blightfall has two tracks. There's a fast track and a slow track. And you rank up based on the amount of blight you have on the slow track. It takes longer. You need more blight to rank up. So on a fast track, You could probably go 6 to 10 sessions on the slow track, 10 to 15, but it's all designed for you to tell a finite story. Your characters, most of them will reach some sort of ending. They either turn to abominations or get so close by the end that they're hardly the people they once were. They're mutated. They've gone through things and personalities have changed. And I think that's something that's powerful in storytelling, is knowing that an ending is coming.
Yeah.
And it allows people to make big decisions, hard decisions that they normally wouldn't if it was a 5-year campaign. Exactly.
And then I see here on the on your page that you're also doing a solo mode. Can you talk a little bit about the solo mode for the game?
I am not doing a solo mode. Deepest Dark?
Oh, I'm misreading this. I was like, what?
Yeah, Cross Club.
I thought about it, and I cannot think of a way to do it because they, in combat, the abilities are meant to interact. You're supposed to find combos and do things where damage becomes ridiculous, and it's fun. Some people are getting calculators out to calculate how much damage they do, which I know you said in the past, you like dicey, not mathy. sorry, math.
I do like dicey, not mathy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Sometimes math is fun. I do remember, I do still, like, it's funny because I'm such a story game guy these days, but, like, I did love Crunch, and, like, I do love it, and I love it in video games. Like, in video games, if there's a way to, like, you know, line up everything to, like, get your percentage multiplier on crits or whatever, I'm, like, I'm gobbling that up. But I guess the game's doing the math for me in that case, but, you know.
Yeah, I would say the hardest math is subtraction. If you've subtracted health from an enemy in any game, that's your max as far as difficulty goes, unless you're uncomfortable with the occasional multiplication.
You know, I've thought about my relationship with, like, Crunch and how much I enjoy, like, mathy over dicey. And there is a thing of, like, you know, I've played in games where I've, like, watched actual plays where someone has, you know, the enemy is 35 feet away instead of 30 feet away, which means they can't hit on this turn or have to do other things to be able to do something. And there is something interesting in that limitation.
Yeah.
Of, like, when you get more crunchy, the addition of crunch does not only just, like, make things complicated in a negative way. It can also add a lot of interesting choices that you have to make because things are so well defined, rather than the slightly, like, hazier edges of the further you get into story games where it's like, ah, close enough.
Exactly. I think there are so many different preferences for gameplay, and there's not a wrong way to play generally. We can probably find an example if we dig deep enough from problem players. But the goal with this game was to find that balance where you still had an engaging combat system where you could strategize and plan, but also your characters technically have 3 stats, which is how much corruption they have, how much blight, and then their humanity points, their HP. So their current and max HP and their blight. Those are the 3 stats.
Really good.
I couldn't help myself.
No, I like it. Last question before we get into some of the details of the crowdfunding. You've talked about these abilities and, like, how they really just, like, get out there. Can you give us, like, an example or two of, like, some of your favorite abilities from the game that just, like, are really fun when they come up at the table or really, like, throw things out of whack?
One of the really fun ones, you can only do it once in a campaign because otherwise your GM will tear all of their hair out and become a bald person. You can just go back in time. Just go back in time. Pick one. Pick a time. Go there. And I think in most games that would be frustrating, but again, this is a game where people just get to do things and tell their stories. One of the ones I really like, this might just be a me thing, there's one for the harbor where you just steal stuff and the person doesn't get to find out for a day. And so they're just, like, yanking things around and chaos is happening and then it all blows up later.
Oh, fun.
The delay timer on finding out that something was stolen is very fun.
Yeah, it just gives you enough leeway to get into trouble.
It's also, everyone knows that the shoe will drop. Like, you're all just waiting for the moment.
Yeah, yeah. I've made choices.
Feels like a big consequence machine that you've made here.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think that's important. You can't have all ups in your story. You have to have downs, too.
Oh, yeah.
I think kind of turning over to the crowdfunding aspect of Blightfall, can you tell us a little bit about, you know, the specifics of your crowdfunder? So where is it crowdfunding? When is it crowdfunding? What can people get if they back? And then also, I'd love to hear a little bit about the team that is helping make this game a reality.
It is on BackerKit as part of Zinetopia, and I am cross-collabing with The Deepest Dark, by the way. I want to mention that before I forget. It's an awesome game, GMless 2-6 players, about going deep into the ground, getting trapped in a cave-in, being forced to go deeper and deeper, both in the earth and into your own characters. Past and relationships, and then eventually dying, which is why we collaborated, because dying is great. Big fan. As far as actually backing it goes, we've got three tiers. There's the PDF tier, $20. There's the book tier and PDF, $30. And then there's a $40 tier, and that is where you get the book, the PDF, a designer commentary, where essentially I'm going to put the PDF inside a bigger sized PDF and just have notes all over the margins, because I love that stuff. And hopefully other people find that interesting as well.
I love that.
And I'll sign it. I'm sure you want some random guy's signature. This is your chance.
I really love, honestly, Elliot's talked about this a lot before, but like every crowdfunding should have a signed copy tier, because some people just want to support the game a little bit more. And it's like, it's a nice thing to have. And also, I love a design commentary. The first time I saw that was with Anamnesis, Sam Lee's Anamnesis, and I thought it was phenomenal. And every time I see that, I immediately back that tier, because I'm like, there's going to be some fun tidbits about this game in there that remind me of like DVD commentary type stuff.
Which I miss desperately. And I don't want to toot my own horn, because this is the coolest thing that's ever been admitted. Did I buy a new copy of The Muppet Christmas Carol on Blu-ray that came last week because it has a new commentary from The Muppets? Yes. Yes, I did.
As you should. As you should.
I was excited about it until I realized the commentary was from The Muppets, and now I'm thrilled.
Oh, good, good. I thought that was going to go the other way.
No. Now I'm like, ooh, I have to buy this. Also, my wife would love this. I know what I'm getting her for the next gift-giving holiday.
Yes. Yeah. Strong.
Excellent. I'm glad to help.
And then, Matthew, who all do you have working on this with you?
For cover art, I have Sarah Mason. She's based out of the UK. She's a fantastic illustrator. You can find her prints online, Sarah Mason Art. Highly recommend. She has Hollow Knight prints of both the Hollow Knight and the main character Silk Song. I have not played that one.
Hornet,
thank you. For video, I have Zach Havenlock from Tales from the Unknown. He is fantastic. I think the video that we have featured on the crowdfunding page is something really special, and just blown away working with him. It was a great collaborative process. Please reach out to him. Hire them both. And then there's a VTT that's done on Google Sheets, and that is by Christopher Fisher, aka Jamelli, he's known as. He's done VTTs for some other systems too, and he has a Ko-fi page where you can support him. But he's extremely talented and just a pleasure to work with as well.
Love hearing about just like great teams doing like a lot of cool stuff. I feel like every Zine month it's great because we get to meet so many new designers who are, you know, doing a first project or an early project, or maybe they're just doing like the weird little guy that's, you know, aside from their big project. But I love, as we go through, we always find like two or three people on teams that start like, we find them on multiple teams, we find them across multiple years. It's just, it's really exciting to see the world kind of expand of the people involved in tabletop role playing and how they move about different crowdfunders over the years.
Definitely. And I think especially Zach, Sarah's done stuff for TTRPGs before, but Zach has recently gotten to the video producing, and I think he's going to become very popular. The other thing I just want to mention is that I could not have done this without the RPG community. I have had so many people volunteering their time. Like I mentioned right at the top, Rich Hatchling's Games gave me advice on my crowdfunding page. I had a mentorship through the Unpub Tabletop Mentorship, and that was with Alex Sprague of Wannabe Games, and that was fantastic. I've made a Rascal announcement where I talk about all the help I've received. Even local people in Atlanta, there was a publishing meetup, and I was the only one there with questions. So I just had a bunch of Atlanta people in TTRPG publishing, just answering everything and anything. And it was so fantastic. So I just want to shout out every single person who's helped me, because they are fantastic and I love this community.
Amen to that.
Hell yeah.
It is a thing that we're reminded of every time we do the Zine Month series, that like the TTRPG community is so helpful and like loving and nurturing to new people or anyone making any kind of project, just because we're all sickos and we want to see more cool stuff in the world. Like, we all want Blightfall to exist. We're like, hey, how can I help make that happen? So, you know, just a little tidbit for anyone out there who's thinking of making a game. The community is incredibly supportive. Ask for help or ask for advice, and dollars to donuts, you're going to get not only advice, but good advice and good help, and it will get you closer to making that first thing.
Yeah. And let me just, I guess, remind our audience and remind everyone out there that you can always send us an email and ask for advice as well. I'm always happy to chat with anyone who needs help with their first crowdfunder. So dropping that in here in case anybody needs a reminder.
Hell yeah. Matthew, as we kind of move to a close here, I'd love to close out by asking you the question that we ask to all of the people we bring on the show, and that is, what are you bringing to the table? And normally this is a place for you to give a recommendation of anything in the world, could be movies, TV shows, books, whatever. But for this interview in particular, because it's Zine Month, we'd love for you to recommend another Zine Month project that you think people should know about.
I want to recommend a game that is crowdfunding currently on Kickstarter for Zine Month. It is called Aqua Tofana. It is a game by my mentors, actually, over at Wannabe Games. And it is a solo game about poisoning your husband, which, you know, a lot of people, I think, can relate to. Certainly my wife.
And you got to play through those fantasies in a safe way before you do them for real. You got to prep. You got to do your prep.
1,000.
That's great.
Yeah, when there people are like, your wife only owns one RPG. Strange.
She's really into it.
Hell yeah, we will put a link for that in the show notes below so everyone can go check it out. Matthew, thank you so much for coming to the table. You want to let people know one last time where they can find you online if they're looking for you, and where they can find and back Blightfall.
Yes, you can find me at matthewayres.bluesky.social. And you can find Blightfall on BackerKit as part of their Zinetopia event running all February till the 27th.
Go back the game early and often, and definitely check out that director's commentary. I am excited to read that. I think that's going to be very fun. Thanks so much for coming to the table, and good luck with the rest of your Zine Month experience.
Yeah,
I appreciate it. Thank you so much.